105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the BizConnect radio show with myself, Martin White, and our fabulous guest in the studio today,
Paul Briner.
Paul, tell us a little bit about your business briefly, if you don't mind.
We have an architectural practice based out of Canterbury in Kent. We've been going about four and a half years now. And, we're just really excited about what the future may hold.
Fantastic. So we're going to be talking to Paul at length during the show today. We're on till 3 o'clock. We've got plenty of music as well in the lineup today. And we're also going to cover off some of the business events that are taking place over the next couple of weeks as well. So do stay with us and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to the BizConnect radio show today. As I said before the break, I'm delighted that we've got Paul Briner with us today from Studio Briner, a firm of architects based in Canterbury. Paul, lovely to have you with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Paul, give us a bit of an overview, if you don't mind, about Studio Briner, who you guys are, where you are, and your role as the MD for the business. Just give us a brief oversight there.
Okay, we are a fairly young practice, both in age of the people we have in there and the company itself. But we work predominantly within sort of healthcare, the healthcare sector. Although we do also have other projects at the moment within sort of education, housing, both resi and sort of private residential and development. And also commercial. Mm-hmm. So we do cover a broad range of architectural sectors. And although we're sort of fairly small, we have less than 15 people, but although we're fairly small, we do have a very sort of large experience scope, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about some of that healthcare work then. I mean, are we talking about hospitals? Are we talking about care homes? What is it we're talking about there?
Well, the two you mentioned, we've actually got both of those. We've worked quite a bit with NHS clients over the last year, especially the COVID sort of aspect. We spent a good part of the last sort of 16 months working on rapid COVID testing rooms, designing COVID wards, sort of refits of old wards and turning them into COVID wards. So yeah, we've had sort of, we're quite well versed in sort of that type of work.
So that's quite a sort of functional form of architecture. Yep. Is that the right word to use?
No, absolutely.
You're not trying to necessarily beautify anything or make the kind of environment more aesthetically pleasing on the outside. It's a functional brief.
No, we definitely are, actually.
Oh, you are? Okay.
No, there is a lot of evidence that suggests a bright, a light, airy sort of medical space will definitely contribute towards a person's well-being. Mm-hmm. and actually encourage their wellness, should we say. Mm-hmm. So no, we definitely do have those conversations with our clients on that. Yeah. On that aspect.
That's really interesting, is it? Because you walk into a hospital, for example, and that's not necessarily the first thing that strikes you, is it? You know, when you walk in, you've got these sort of very shiny floors and sort of rounded corners everywhere and swing doors. But I guess that's all kind of legacy build stuff, and when there's a new project that needs to be built or incorporated, you've got a more of a blank piece of paper, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And some of our projects are sort of design led, so we do have that input. Other projects we work on, we're essentially collating employers' requirements for a third party, like say Siemens, to come in and do a turnkey solution. Mm. So we do get sort of a whole sort of range of different types of projects, even within the same the hospital, for instance.
Yeah.
So
is that what kind of sets you apart, you think, as a practice, your kind of specialism in that area, or How would you kind of describe your uniqueness as a firm?
No, I would definitely wouldn't say that. I would I would say what sets us apart is our team. I think we have an amazing team. Our skills set us apart, and I think our passion for what we do sets us apart. So I think they're the sort of the main factors in what we do. So basically, you know, essentially the people we have, they are nowhere else. You know, they are uniquely our team. Uh-huh. And I think the fact that we have a 50% female workforce across the whole practice, they're not all just in admin. I think also brings a very unique sort of approach to what we do. Mm. So from that point of view, I think we do have an approach where we sort of hire for personality and then train for skills. So I think what we're trying to sort of really achieve is an amazing team that back each other up, that look after each other as well. When especially with COVID recently, we've had staff members previously who've actually contracted COVID, and you know, we looked after them and delivered food parcels to them every other day and that type of thing. So no, I think our uniqueness is our team and how we look after each other.
That's nice. So. Yeah, your culture and your ethos as a firm, which is really nice to hear, isn't it?
Well, I like to think so, and I think that's how I would have liked to have been treated as I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I think I heard somewhere be the boss you wanted when you were 21 years old.
Right.
Uh-huh. So that's what I'm trying to be. Just. Yeah.
No, that makes perfect sense, yeah. And, I mean, there's quite a sort of, there's quite a responsibility, isn't there, in a practice like yours, because you are leaving a legacy for future generations. Quite often it is a very public legacy. It's very visible, you know, to people on the outside. And are you conscious of that? Is that something you're kind of conscious of as a firm? Is there a sort of a guiding principle with, you know, within the firm that kind of leads you down a certain path in terms of, you know, wanting to do good, you know, with the work and the projects that you do? What's the overriding kind of, how would you describe the overriding kind of thought process there, you know, when you get a brief from a client? Is there something that you're all constantly trying to kind of strive for and achieve?
That's a big question.
Well, you're obviously very like-minded, aren't you, as a sort of a group of people?
We are. I think the overriding aspect of all of it is integrity.
Mm.
Act with integrity in all things. And right. I think the connections that we're building within the especially the Kent construction sort of space, more and more people are feeling that way.
Yeah.
So I think first and foremost, it's about that.
Mm.
We don't have a design style, should I say. So we're not a contemporary practice only, or we're not a traditional practice only. I think what we do is we employ a process that empowers our team to go and find design solutions.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a sort of an eco slant on all things that we do. So we do always try and bring that. Well, we will always bring it to the table.
Mm.
Whether or not a budget can sustain that is then sort of dealt with. But I think that really, in essence, what we're trying to just achieve is a design process that everything gets plugged into. Whatever comes out the other end is the outcome as such. We're not trying to preempt any of that.
Right, okay.
So
sort of free flowing creativity, but within the confines of a client brief, ultimately, I guess.
Everything is always, you know, dealing with the confines of a client's brief, which I think sometimes is an issue with the whole sort of eco thing moving forward. That at the moment, the more environmentally aware and friendly you want something to be, the more you tend to have to pay for that currently.
Yes.
So I think that's something that we're quite aware of.
Mm.
But that's not something that we're shying away from.
Mm-hmm.
As a practice, we are looking at how we deal with that sort of question.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think what we're looking to achieve is to sort of bring about a cost efficient sort of environmental approach.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading some, I was watching a video on YouTube the other day about sort of building with timber, and one of the comments was, I would like an eco house, but I don't really want to sell my wife and children's kidneys.
Mm.
You know, and so I think there is still this perception that to build environmentally sustainably, it costs a lot of money.
Mm.
And I think what we're trying to do is just approach that in a different way and trying to sort of to deal with that perception.
Brilliant. Well, I think what we'll do, Paul, is we'll pick that theme up in the next bit of the show if we can, and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for listening in to the BizConnect radio show today with myself, Martin White, and our fabulous guest in the studio, Paul Briner.
Hello again.
Paul, lovely to have you with us today. Before the break, we were starting to talk about some of the other aspects that you're very involved with in your architectural practice, in particular, building eco. And you also have another a business called Hummingbird Eco Homes, which we're going to talk a little bit about in a moment. But you also have another business called BBA Consulting. Just introduce that for us, if you wouldn't mind, Paul.
Okay. BBA Consulting was set up to complement what we were doing at Studio Briner in terms of sort of document control, planning consultancy, cost consultancy, and those types of things. I think sometimes we just felt that there was a small breakdown in communication when we were going to third-party consultants. So we felt by having some of these elements within our office and under our sort of locus of control, we felt that there was just an efficiency there that we could bring to our sort of clients, essentially.
Stuff always gets lost in translation, doesn't it?
Can
in
do,
business?
For sure.
So just having everything under one roof, I guess, makes life a lot easier there.
Well, it was the way that old architectural practices used to be. You know, they did have everybody under one roof. Mm. And so I think that there was a certain amount of sort of control over all of that, and so yeah, it's just something that we feel is an efficient way forward, and seemed a bit of a no-brainer, really. So yeah.
And there's a strong sort of HR element to that side of the business as well, as I understand, with your partner and office manager, Rachel Breaker there. So she's Rachel's sort of level 7 CIPD, were you saying?
Yep, that's true. Mm-hmm. She's chartered, right. Or at least I think she's applied to be chartered, at least. So yeah, she brings a whole sort of different sort of approach and a whole load of skills that I definitely don't have.
Yeah,
and I think we just realised with the lockdowns that happened last year, we decided to sort of get the ISO compliance, you know, for the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that process, in talking with other people, contractors and other practices, that there seemed to be sort of this little bit of a hole in terms of being able to just help people out with, you know, with their compliance, and there's an efficiency there that I feel that we could bring to them. So yeah, it's sort of I suppose project management and consultancy plus a little bit of HR and management consultancy, yeah, all sort of rolled into one, really.
Yeah, that's a really important string to your bow, I think, particularly, you know, when it comes to things like 14001, you know, environmental management system. I think more and more businesses are going to be held accountable, and need to demonstrate that kind of accreditation, aren't they, moving
forward? Yeah, and although 14001 is quite a big step in one go, I know Kent sort of have a scheme that's a stepping stone towards that, you know, and so there are ways in which we can get to that in a sort of more roundabout route while still having some sort of accreditation in the meantime.
Yeah.
So I think that that's an important factor in it all as well, that we don't need to know everything straight away. And I think that sort of approach sometimes helps, especially smaller practices, and just having that knowledge as well. Sometimes it just helps if we're linking and connecting with a number of different smaller businesses that we all help each other in that way forward. So
No, it's a really good point. I mean, the program you're referring to, I think, is called STEM.
That's correct. Yeah.
Which is Steps to Environmental Management, and that is a program that KCC run. It's a workshop based program. It's actually being done online at the moment, and funnily enough, I've just gone through that that process myself to get accredited with my business, Green Business Hub. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the old kind of the nut and the sledgehammer, you know, kind of comparison there, isn't it? And for a lot of smaller businesses that want to be able to kind of demonstrate their proactivity in that space, you know, 14,001 is a tough nut to crack, you
for
know,
sure.
The smaller you are. So
absolutely.
Fantastic. Good. Well, that leads us nicely on, I think, to talking about your brand new initiative that you're getting off the ground at the moment, which is Hummingbird Eco Homes. So
that's correct.
Tell us more information about that, Paul.
Okay, so we are looking at producing an off-the-shelf eco house, is essentially the premise. And it won't be a one-size-fits-all. It will be a house that will be anywhere between 3 and 5 bedrooms. So again, not necessarily constrained to the smaller dwelling. But I think what we're looking to do is not reinvent the wheel every time. I think there's a perception that eco houses in of themselves are expensive. And I think that's a difficult thing to overcome with the vast majority of people, because to a certain degree they're right, they are more expensive. The technology, although much, much better, it still costs more than your, I suppose, traditional technologies, your gas boilers and those types of things. So there is a premium that needs to be paid. And if you're redesigning an eco house every single time, then all those calculations need to be redone every single time. So yeah, what we're looking at is to start with a basic model, had bits and pieces as you need. So maybe add an extra bedroom or an office, which would always be, we would sort of design these things in, because I think that if COVID's taught us anything now is that we can work from home. It's just that the vast majority of people don't have a good space to work from home. So let's design home offices in, and good ones, not just the little 2 square metre space that we used to have in Lifetime Homes.
The afterthought.
Quick, put that in the upstairs landing, make a bigger landing. So we want to approach that and then, you know, give people options in terms of material finishes, both ground floor and first floor. But the vast majority of the technology has already been designed. The vast majority of the connections have already been done. Now we will need to take into account geographical location, et cetera, so forth, those types of things. But as a whole, the vast majority of the design is done. So people can go to a website, pick what they need, pick material finishes, and then we handle the project from start to finish. We will deal with the planning, we will deal with the building. We're partnering up with a local contractor to build these houses out, and really try and get an affordable eco sort of house, you know, moving forward. So that's the bare bones of it, such.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly exciting. So is that what's sort of commonly referred to as a sort of a design and build approach in the construction industry? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, normally, I mean, a design and build generally is that the contractor has sole responsibility to bring a design and have ownership and responsibility for that design and then build it out. So yes, it is, you know, in the bare sort of meaning of it, yes. It come to us, we'll do everything for you, and you don't have to worry about finding other people to
Fantastic.
To fill in the holes.
Good. Fantastic. Well, I think what we'll do, Paul, is we'll play a little bit more music, and then when we come back after the break, we'll dig into that a little bit deeper if we can, because I think we need to put that into some kind of context in terms of, the regulatory environment that the government are obviously setting at the moment, and their expectations in terms of, zero net carbon and everything else, because obviously it needs to fit very much within that. So, do stay with us, and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back again, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the Biz Connect radio show today. I'm delighted to say that we've got Paul Briner from Studio Briner, a firm of architects based in Canterbury, in the studio with us today. Paul, lovely to have you with us.
Thank you.
We were talking before the break. We were starting to get into the whole eco-homes idea, because I think, at the moment, it's not necessarily a reality. But I think there's certainly some regulation in the offing coming down the pipe from the government in terms of the expectation for how we build homes moving forwards. Is that fair to say?
I believe so. Mm.
I mean, if we think about, heating, for example,
yep.
Traditional heating systems in houses, I think the government have said, is it as soon as 2025, they're saying no new homes will be being built with a traditional gas-fired central heating system?
Well, I believe that's what was mooted.
Yeah.
But I don't think the industry could handle that.
No.
And I think this is where the whole issue of the climate emergency, environmental sustainability and everything gets very, very complicated.
Mm.
We're not just going to put up a few sort of turbines here and there and a few hydro plants to sort of generate our sort of our electricity, mm-hmm. sticking a few geothermals and away we go. Mm. It's a far more complicated matter than that, and I think when the science and the political will are so sort of closely knitted, mm. it's very, very difficult to understand from either side of the argument, mm. What the reality and what the truth is.
Mm.
So, I think until you have facts and you have truth, it's mm. very, very difficult to understand any of these bits and pieces and how we do that. So, and I hope that's what the government is trying to do at the moment.
Mm.
Whether or not they are is another question. But I think we need to get to the truth of what's going on first,
yeah.
in order to then be able to sort of put a solution in place for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very, that we've just had torrential rainstorms. We've had news globally about, heat waves, mm-hmm. and again, torrential rain interspersed with all of that. It's certainly not right to kind of point any single event like that in the kind of direction of climate change. But nevertheless, I think there is now this acceptance that the global climate is warming, and that CO2 is a kind of a big part of that.
Well, I suppose you would argue that some places aren't warming.
Mm.
So again, I think that what is the reality?
Mm.
Now I'm a tree hugger at heart. Mm. I spent my 20s bouncing down on, rivers on the back of a raft and spending my time, sleeping in hammocks between trees.
Mm.
I love the outdoors. I love everything that it has. But again, until we ask very specific questions, mm. we can't really get specific answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a climate change going on at the moment. But then I think there is also evidence that suggests that has happened quite a few times throughout the Earth's
yep.
history.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of that we're involved with, mm. again, I don't think that, depending on what side of the argument you sit, mm. I don't know if that's been fully ascertained.
Mm.
So again, I think all we can do, and this is, I suppose, our approach at Studio Briner, is mm-hmm. we're trying to do the little that we can do in our little corner of the world mm-hmm. the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
I think doing nothing is far worse.
Yeah.
So I suppose...
So you're proactively moving in that direction, knowing that, you know, it's preferable.
Absolutely.
You know, to what we do currently.
Well, let's put it this way. If climate change is happening and we're the sort of the instigators of that,
mm-hmm.
by doing something, at least we try and limit that.
Yeah.
If we do nothing at all, you know. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I suppose that's what we, you know, some people just wish it to go away.
Yes.
Some people want it to go away. Mm. But we're just saying, well, look, you know, yeah. we don't know what's going on. We're not yeah. specialists.
Yeah.
But we will try and limit the impact that our built environment has,
yes.
you know, on nature at large.
Yeah.
So that's the approach we're taking.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
You know, it's better that we do something than nothing.
Yes.
And I think if everybody took that approach in little by little,
yeah.
then I think that would probably help.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I say, I'm no expert, so.
No, but in your mind's eye, you know, and in the lack of sort of clear direction from the government in terms of, you know, what an eco home is,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is an eco home to you? You know, what sort of, you know, what building practices, you know, what technology will you be building into, you know, future Hummingbird homes,
mm-hmm.
Along those lines? You know, where are the kind of the key kind of wins from your point of view?
Well, essentially, I think an eco home for us is one that uses far, far less energy
mm-hmm.
in its day-to-day use. But that's just the building itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a personal element that goes along with that. Now, how many of us are willing to sort of, you know, maybe restrict our use on iPads, TVs,
mm-hmm.
mobile phones, cars, planes, you know, and all of these other things?
Yeah.
So whilst we can limit the energy used for a house,
mm-hmm.
if we're jumping on 25 planes a year to jet off around the world, then actually, really, you know, where's that balance?
Mm.
You know, I think there's always a certain amount of eco-hypocrisy. We have to live with a certain amount. I would love to have an electric car, but at the moment I can't afford one.
Mm.
You know, so I think there is always a hypocrisy we live with on a day-to-day basis. And I think we just need to give each other a little bit of a break in terms of, you know, just let's get down the road, you know, with the little things that we can do at the moment
mm-hmm.
until such time we can afford mm-hmm. to, you know, go the whole hog. But I think we will work, you know, on to that end
mm-hmm.
to make houses as thermally efficient as we possibly can, to use air source heat pumps and heat recovery systems to reuse that heat, you know, a number of times before it gets ejected.
Mm-hmm. Building with timber, sustainable timber, is that
definitely important? But again, there's you know, practices that we need to make sure that are not contributing to the climate change, because
mm-hmm.
you know, because there are even in timber frame building, there are elements to that that still have an impact on the environment.
Of course.
So I think again, it's finding that balance.
Mm.
And I think if every sort of maybe building method had a hypocrisy rating, that would probably be an easier approach to sort of go with it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, concrete still has a part to play in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not just saying, well, we just build in timber and we, you know, remove concrete or we remove brick and block.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the concept of thermal mass within a building is a really important factor. But you obviously can't do that with just timber.
Mm.
So again, I think we just again need to have a look at these people, and we would love to be able to sort of partner up with different companies who offer a different element of that, to be able to pool our research and pool our knowledge and, you know, those types of things.
Mm.
So we're not here to, you know, I suppose get out there and say, oh, look what we did.
Mm.
I think we would love to be able to, you know, do it with everybody else and
mm-hmm.
Let's do it together, as opposed to
as a collaborative thing.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. So,
and also not have it kind of thrown on you from on high by the government saying, right, you know, this is our spec for an eco home, because it's not going to work like that, I guess, ultimately, is it?
I don't think so. And there are lots of people out there who've had far more experience than us at this sort of thing in certain areas. I mean, you know, we would go to local companies who have far more experience with, say, air source heat pumps,
mm-hmm.
for instance.
Yes, of course.
You know, we don't know everything about that mm-hmm. that type of stuff. We understand that they are one of the most efficient systems out there. But again, we would need input from, you know, energy consultants and suppliers of these things to see how do they work in the real world. So again, I think what we're just trying to do is at least get the conversation moving and at least ask the right specific questions so that we can get the right answers. And, you know, the government, they will change. It will, they will wane. They will move the goalposts. They will, you know, do the things that they do. And I think we just get on with it anyway, really.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think that's a really good... a really good way to kind of approach this, isn't it? It's, you know, don't wait to be told. You know, proactively move towards what you know is the right thing.
Yeah, I think the... I was reading something the other day with... There was a quote from Michael Jordan, the basketball player, and he said, some people want it to happen, some people wish it would happen, and then some people just make it happen. So I think we just want to be in that that bottom one. We just want to make it happen and
and see, be able to offer that ultimately, you know, to consumers, to customers, you know, by the end of this year, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the plan. So touch wood.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you all the best with that. Paul, if people want to get in touch with you, if they have a project in mind, you know, either a commercial project, a domestic project, or they need some help in terms of, you know, your consultancy services, that perhaps they'd like to talk to you about, you know, ISO certification, for example. What's the best way to get in touch with you guys in your practice in Canterbury?
Well, we've got a website up and running. That's www.briner.uk. All our contact information is on there. But if anyone wants to get in touch with me direct, it's just paul@briner.uk.
Brilliant.
And we can go from there, start the conversation.
Fantastic. Great. Well, it's been lovely to have you with us today.
No, thanks for the invite. Very much appreciate it.
Well, no, it's our pleasure. And to get your take on you know, where the industry is heading, you know, longer term. And I think we'll have to get you back on, you know, towards the end of the year to talk more about Hummingbird Eco Homes and where you guys are in that whole process in terms of being able to...
I better pull my finger out then and get it sorted.
You've kind of put a marker in the sand there.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant. But for now, thank you so much for joining us, Paul.
Appreciate it.
And we'll catch up with you again in the near future. Thanks.
Bye for now.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, that brings us nearly to the end of another BizConnect radio show. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening today. We've had a brilliant guest in the studio, Paul Briner from Architects Studio Briner in Canterbury. I've just got a couple of minutes left to tell you about some business events that are happening this week that may be of interest to you. On Wednesday, there is another networking meeting of the Marsh Network, which is really targeted at Ashford, Folkestone, New Romney businesses in that circle, if you like. It's 10:30 a.m. First timers go free. You can email terry@botfield.net. Otherwise, it's £5, which includes a donation to a local charity, Calm. It's a Zoom networking meeting. It starts at 10:30, normally goes on till about 12 o'clock. You can find all of the information for that on marshnetwork.co.uk. Our good friends at Cyberfort Group over in Ash, just outside Sandwich. They've been on the show. Gary Hibbard, cybersecurity expert, has been on the show a couple of times in the past. They have a nuclear bunker open day. Take a tour of our unique data center. So their data center is actually housed in a Cold War bunker underground, and they are opening that up to businesses that are perhaps interested in co-location for their IT requirements moving forwards. And you can pop along every Wednesday in August and have a tour, a guided tour. And I'm sure they're throwing in some lunch there as well. But booking is essential. So you will need to visit the Cyberfort Group website, or you can look on supplymobusiness.co.uk on our community page, and all of the information will be on there. We are obviously located very close to East Sussex down here in Folkestone, and you may well know of somebody that is potentially thinking about starting up their own business in and around East Sussex, specifically if they are in the Hastings, Bexhill, St Leonard's-on-Sea catchment area. They can access some free startup workshops that are being run by the Let's Do Business group, and there's £750 worth of business support on offer there for free, including things like exploring your business idea, business planning, understanding your competition, managing business finances. So it really is quite an all-encompassing series of 2.5 hour online workshops. There's four of them in total, running throughout August and then into September. But you need to apply by the 12th of August in order to enrol in this program. So if you know of anybody, please direct them to the Let's Do Business Group website. Or again, you can find out more information about that on the Supply My Business website. And I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with another couple of fabulous studio guests. But for now, all that remains for me to say is thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch up with you in the very near future. Bye for now.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_Biz.